Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This is CBS Eye in the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Balkans. The Balkans were the bane of this of Europe 100 years ago. But they are a mystery today in the 21st century, not because of what happened once upon a time, the outbreak of the Great War, the First War, but because of what happened at the close of the 20th century. Lost to me in the reporting that now many years later is refreshed and stated anew by Tim Judah, the Balkans correspondent for The Economist magazine. We have a map that is impossible to summarize other than it's the former Yugoslavia into pieces and sovereignties, starting from Slovenia in the north and flowing to Montenegro, to North Macedonia, dominated by the state of Serbia, but not entirely. In other words, everything I say can be qualified, and I welcome Tim, and we begin at a city called Vukovar that I meet for the first time on the border of Croatia and Belgrade. Tim, congratulations for helping me understand a little more of the Western Balkans. What happened at Vukovar was a massacre and a leveling in 1991. What does the city look like today? What does it remember about the crimes visited upon the people of Vukovar? Good evening to you.
Good evening, and thanks for having me on the show. I mean, perhaps I should give a little bit of background for listeners. Vukovar is was a port city on the Danube. And what happened was that during the beginning of the Yugoslav wars in 1991, Serbian forces and the Yugoslav army tried to capture Vukovar, which in fact they did successfully do in November 1991, but they pretty much leveled it in the process. And they did that alongside local Serbian militias, because at that time, about a third of the population of Vukovar was ethnic Serb. So they took the city. It was leveled. There was a massacre that you mentioned at one massacre in particular, right at the end of the Serbian campaign. About 200 mostly Croatian soldiers were taken from a hospital in Vukovar and shot just outside the city. What happened was that rather like this certain areas of Ukraine today, a sort of quasi-statelet called the Republic of Serbian Krajina was set up in Croatia and covered about one third of Croatia at its height. But in 1995, when the Croats had been kind of properly armed, and they also got a green light from the Americans, they basically retook all the Serbian areas, except they didn't actually launch a military attack on Vukovar and that part of the east. What happened was that all the rest of it fell militarily, and then the Serbs basically gave it up, and there was a sort of brief transition period with the UN, and it was given back to Croatia. So what it looks like now is unbelievably different from how it looked like in 1991, when it was just smoldering ruins. The Croats have rebuilt absolutely everything. It's completely, well, almost completely beautifully restored, and all over the place there are monuments, museums, and things to see. But in a way, it's kind of deceptive, because there aren't many people there. Right. There were 45,000 people before the war, and now there might be 18,300. It's a very depressed area. It hasn't really recovered from the war. And it's a kind of sad place, really. I mean, beautifully restored with hardly any people and hardly any life, really.
Why this is so helpful to me, Tim, is that in your article, you make it very clear there are analogies with what we're witnessing in Ukraine now. Perhaps some contrast, but perhaps some guide to the future. Ukraine also was in turmoil in 1991, as was all the former Soviet empire, with the end of the Soviet Union at the end of 1991. Yugoslavia had been under Soviet influence, and then Yugoslavia itself fragmented into pieces, something that is possible and to get worse in Ukraine. We don't know the end. What I take from your piece most of all is how people remember it, Tim, not to refight the Yugoslav wars, but to say that these many decades later, the memories are fresh still, the scars are fresh, and the tensions between the regions, do they still exist as well, Tim? Resentment between Croatia and Serbia?
I mean, it's quite strange, really, because, you know, I had, as you know, as a journalist, you only have a certain amount of space. And of course, you always wish that you had more. A Montenegrin politician that I went to see, he said, you know, for all of us who remember the wars, everything, it all feels like yesterday. And, you know, especially for some of that generation, a sort of bitterness lingers. And a lot of that has also been passed on to the younger generations. But simultaneously, you also have got something sort of a kind of contrary feeling in most of the former Yugoslavia, not all of it, which is that actually a lot of the sort of bonds that were broken during the wars were in a way came back together. You know, they still like the same music, they still eat the same food, they still go on the same places on holiday. And, you know, that in the past I've termed the Yugosphere. So it's a little bit of a contradictory picture. But, you know, governments and politicians especially are, you know, very adept at using resentments when it suits them, you know, especially when elections are coming or there are commemorations and things. They will kind of happily sort of blow on the embers. And I'd say that there are different kind of levels of sort of resentment and Yugosphere. For example, it's a kind of rather different situation between Kosovo, which is predominantly or overwhelmingly ethnic Albanian, and Serbia, and where real tensions do exist between, you know, Kosovo and Serbia, which is sort of by way of contrasting it between, you know, Serbia and Croatia. I mean, it's always possible that that some sort of low-level violence can break out again in Kosovo or between Serbs and Albanians in Kosovo. That's possible. But, you know, in Croatia, you know, no. But in Bosnia, again, you have a different situation. So, you know, different areas feel different at different times.
The U.S. comes in on this in the middle of the decade, and I remember vividly Sarajevo and Srebrenica, the massacres there, you talk about that. But Kosovo also is important here to mention because, and again, Tim, I'm reading this and trying to understand what we're witnessing in Ukraine. The explanation was the reason for these interventions or these invasions or these aggressions by Serbia was because a part of the population was Serbian. That's similar to the case that Moscow is making, that a part of the population of Eastern Ukraine is Russian. They claim to be Russian. So what do we learn from that analogy, taking a piece of a country and claiming you have to liberate the people that are like you and make enemies of the people that are not like you?
Well, I mean, of course, it's a kind of fake analogy because, of course, you know, Russia, you know, has had until now, until 2014, had long ago recognized the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Ukraine and had signed treaties with Ukraine to that effect. The difference in Yugoslavia was that it was one country which was breaking up. So the issue was, where should the borders lie? And nationalist Serbs said, well, all Serbs should live in one state. And they were trying to sort of try to draw the borders of this new state. In the end, there was the EU had legal advice, took legal advice, and it was decided that in fact the borders should lie where the federal the units, or the republics, rather. There were six republics of former Yugoslavia, and it was decided that those would be the borders. Subsequently, of course, Kosovo became independent, or declared independence, which Serbia does not recognize, and it was not a republic in former Yugoslavia, but it was a federal unit. It was a part, it was a sort of autonomous part of Serbia, and it was represented on the in the Yugoslav government as a separate unit, quite unlike the sort of fake republics which the Russians set up in eastern Ukraine.
An irony within ironies in your explication, and I thank you, Tim, for helping me with these countries. I have to stare at the map to understand all these different versions of Yugoslavia. It's not even cut up like a pie. I can't imagine what metaphor I could use to describe what this map looks. Just the Western Balkans. You spoke to a political scientist from Zagreb. The politicians, says Dejan Jovic, politicians from all sides in Bosnia are revisionists in that they think the war ended badly for them and their nation and would welcome the opportunity to change that. Does everybody remember the war ending badly? Is it grievance throughout the Western Balkans?
I mean, it's certainly the case for politicians. You know, most people just want to get on with the rest of their lives and make sure that, that they're getting paid and that they can get by. So it's especially politicians who are constantly sort of reminding people that if you don't support me, then they are going to come and get us and take advantage of us. I mean, the thing about Bosnia is that, you know, it's been 27 years since the end of the war in Bosnia. And every year, I'm sure that people who, you know, who have sort of even a glancing interest in the region will know that, like a perennial annual in your garden, stories are published saying Bosnia is on the brink of war again. And it, of course, is always turns out not to be true. So you have this kind of contradictory issue, this feeling in Bosnia that, you know, politicians don't get on, the politicians are always beating the nationalist drums, and indeed it is, it's a, you know, fairly dysfunctional state, but, you know, in 27 years there's been no inter-ethnic violence, you know, ever again, and there's been, you know, there is no violence, you know, people kind of travel all over the country perfectly freely, you know, without a problem. So again, it's one of these contradictory issues that it might be kind of like worse than it seems, and also, you know, that goes with, you know, a lot of the economy as well, not just in Bosnia. I mean, certainly true in Bosnia, but in the whole of the region, that if you believed all the statistics, everybody in the Western Balkans would be starving. But the fact is that they have sort of huge grey and black economies, which means that not everybody, but a lot of people are a lot wealthier than the statistics would suggest. And that certainly takes this sort of, hopefully would mean that they would be less likely to sort of follow leaders into some sort of new wars and new clashes.
We're speaking of the analogies with Ukraine. Is this possible, Tim? And I'm learning this for the first time. Kosovo, which you say Serbia does not recognize as a breakaway state from Serbia, is Kosovo the new Crimea? You know that Moscow makes much of their annexation of Crimea, quite separate from the Donbass. Can we imagine in 30 years that Crimea will also still be contended by Russia?
Well, do you mean contended by Russia or contended by Ukraine?
I mean, I think it would be contended by the conflict. Yes, contended. In other words, remain unresolved the way you report Kosovo is unresolved.
Well, we don't know who will be in power. We don't know who's going to be in control of Ukraine in a year, let alone in 30 years. And we certainly have no idea, you know, what sort of a post-war regime or post-war leadership there will be in Russia. But I mean, certainly Putin I'm not so sure so he sees the comparisons, but he likes to use it. So in his speech to the Duma and to sort of Russian to inverted commas the great and the good of Russia when he annexed Crimea in 2014, he made much of what he called the Kosovo precedent, right, where he said that the International Court of Justice had ruled that a declaration of independence was not illegal, and that Crimea had declared independence from Crimea and that from Ukraine, and that as an independent state, it could then join Russia. And this was used again when Donetsk and Lugansk republics declared independence and that they were joining Russia. So, you know, there are, I suppose there are some sort of comparisons. Yes, but, you know, the difference is that, well, Crimea was a kind of autonomous area. It is true. In during the Soviet period and under Ukraine, I think as well, it had had a certain level of autonomy. You know, Crimea in 1991, along with every other region of Ukraine, voted for independence from the Soviet Union. And the fact was that in Serbia, the Kosovo Albanians always regarded themselves as having been absolutely conquered by Serbia in 1912 and reconquered in 1944, 1945. And if there had been a free vote, they would have either joined Serbia and would have certainly voted to leave.
I'm speaking with Tim Tudor of The Economist magazine about the Western Balkans and what we know now, these many decades after the conflict of the breakup of Yugoslavia. Tim mentions the International Criminal Court, and that is also a possibility for the future when we come back. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.